Welcome to This Month in Muscular Dystrophy. I'm Kevin Flanagan from the Center for Gene Therapy at Nationwide Children's Hospital in Columbus, Ohio. Each month on this podcast, we invite authors of recent publications to discuss how their work improves our understanding of inherited neuromuscular diseases and what their work might mean for the treatment of these diseases. It's my great pleasure to have as our guest today Dr. Craig McDonald, Chair and Professor of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation and Professor of Pediatrics at UC Davis in Sacramento, California. Welcome, Craig.
Thanks, Kevin. It's great to be on the program, and it's really good to talk to you.
Well, we wanted to talk to you today about two very interesting papers that you've published within the last year. Both are available, I want to point out to our listeners. Our abstracts are linked on our website. Both have been published in Muscle and Nerve regarding the use of the 6-minute walk test as an outcome measure in Duchenne muscular dystrophy. Craig, what do we mean when we talk about outcome measures?
Kevin, that's a really good question. What outcome measures are really clinical measurements, or they can be laboratory measurements that are really used to measure the status of a patient or the change in status of that patient over time. So just really, for example, these could be objective clinical measures that a physician or a physical therapist may measure on a patient as to how that patient is actually functioning with regard to mobility or self-care skills. They could be subjective patient-reported measures of well-being that you might get from a survey type of measurement or a health-related quality of life measure, or they could be what are called surrogate outcome measures, which are really fairly objective laboratory-based measures that have some correlation to actual patient functioning or some correlation to patient well-being. And sometimes in the context of a clinical trial, these surrogate measures are often used as outcome measures as well.
So that's one of the reasons, I guess, that it's important we define outcome measures, particularly for the use in clinical trials.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we have to have a standardized measurement that we can really all agree upon, that in the context of a clinical trial, that measure can be done really on a consistent basis from center to center. And also, it has to be, usually these measures are things that we can actually objectively measure in a consistent fashion from one center to another center.
So outcome measures, I guess, also they have to have scientific validity and reproducibility and so forth, but they really have to be suitable for a meaningful outcome for patients. Is that right, particularly as they relate to approval of new drugs or new therapies?
Absolutely. In fact, the Food and Drug Administration has actually increasingly recognized the importance of outcome measures that are not only reproducible and not only objective, but are also measures that are clinically meaningful. And what they're really trying to emphasize at this point in time is that these outcome measures should be clinically meaningful, or perhaps be associated with what are called life-changing events with significant impact on health and well-being. So for Duchenne patients, for instance, a clinically meaningful event might be the loss of ambulation, the loss of walking ability, or perhaps the loss of self-feeding skills in a patient that has upper extremity weakness, or perhaps the onset of non-invasive ventilation. These might be defined as clinically meaningful events. And so the outcome measures that we're trying to measure for clinical trials should be things that should be really measurements that are clinically meaningful and could actually be used to predict some of these life-changing events. Kevin, you also mentioned the concept of validity. And really what validity means is that the outcome measure really actually measures what it intends to measure. So we can document validity by really comparing some of these outcome measures with other measures that have been standardized in the previous scientific work. Or we can actually prove predictive validity by showing a relationship between an outcome measure and the occurrence of one of these significant life-changing events. So, for instance, an ambulatory outcome measure, if it could predict the ultimate loss of ambulation or the time to loss of ambulation, that would actually give evidence for predictive validity.
Some of our listeners will be familiar with the discussion of powering studies, how many patients it takes to be in a study. Can you discuss how powering studies are related to outcome measures?
That's really an important issue, particularly as we move forth with these clinical trials in Duchenne dystrophy on some of these very exciting treatments. The issue of power really pertains to how many patients need to be included in a clinical trial so that we can really be confident that the results that the trial is actually providing us are actually accurate results. And so the power is really a function of a number of factors. One is really the effectiveness or the effect size that's caused by the treatment being studied. So if a treatment has really quite substantial positive benefits, the number of patients that would need to be studied over time really are fewer if we see a really quite profound effectiveness of the drug. Also, the consistency and reliability of the outcome measures over time actually is another factor that can influence power. If you have outcome measures that are somewhat variable over time, or if the issue of disease progression is somewhat variable over time, that can actually influence the power so that, again, more subjects would need to be included in a clinical trial so that we can really be confident that the results that we're obtaining are really accurate results.
Well, thanks for that terrific background about outcome measures in general. Let's talk a little bit about the 6-minute walk test itself. And I think for our listeners, we should explain that at its most basic form, it's measuring the distance that someone, a child with Duchenne in this case, can walk in 6 minutes. Where did this test come from and how is it done?
There's really been a lot of interest in the 6-minute walk test in the Duchenne research community as well as the pharmaceutical industry. It really dates back to many decades ago. It's been a test that's been around for a long time. Essentially, what you're measuring is how far a patient can actually ambulate in 6 minutes, really trying to obtain their furthest distance in 6 minutes. And so the actual parameter that is measured in a 6-minute walk test ends up being the actual distance traveled over time. And so really the 6-minute walk test, which has been actually standardized by the American Thoracic Society, so it's used in cardiovascular disease, it's used in other neurologic diseases, it's been used in rheumatologic diseases, patients with osteoarthritis. It's a very common outcome measure that's been used in a variety of clinical populations. It's the advantages of it, it's really a very simple, low-tech, and very cost-effective means of clinically assessing the functional status of a patient. And it's really felt to represent the integrated and global response to exercise in a patient. So it's a fairly integrated measure. So if the patient has some impairment due to weakness or some issues of fatigue or lack of endurance or perhaps impaired cardiopulmonary status, then the 6-minute walk test would actually show some decrement in function in patients with those kinds of impairments. So that's really where the test originated from. We hadn't really used the 6-minute walk test for the history of Duchenne clinical research. The Duchenne clinical researchers had really focused on other measures that were a bit more simple, such as a 30-foot walk-run test or a 10-meter walk-run test, the time to go up and down stairs, the time to rise from a position on the floor to a standing position, the so-called Gowers maneuver. And also the Duchenne Research Committee had also had a lot of experience measuring strength, both with clinical measures of manual muscle testing and quantitative measures as well. When PTC Therapeutics was previously trying to design their clinical trial, initially there was discussion of perhaps using some sort of community-based measure of walking function where you put a device on the ankle, an accelerometer, and actually measure the steps taken in the community. So it's really a quantitative measure of community mobility. But one of the concerns for a clinical trial would be that as you try to apply an outcome measure such as that over many, many different clinical centers around the world in different regions, different climates, different cultures, and so forth, there would be a lot of other issues that could perhaps influence how much a child or a young adult might actually ambulate in the community on a given day. So when you start going into the community for those types of measures, you lose some of the consistency and some of the standardization that you have in more of a capacity-based measure where everybody does the measure in the same fashion from center to center. It's done indoors. It's really done in a very well-defined manner. And so we were actually approached by PTC Therapeutics to see if we could come up with some sort of capacity-based measure of mobility in the Duchenne population. And we really carefully reviewed the literature and looked at the precedent of other measures that had been used to approve drugs by the Food and Drug Administration. And so we thought that it would really make sense to try to utilize the six-minute walk test in the Duchenne population as a standardized and objective and reproducible outcome measure. And just to give you some background in this, historically there was some initial skepticism as to whether the six-minute walk test would work, and part of the concern was the developmental delay, the mild developmental delay seen in some patients with Duchenne dystrophy, which might limit how young the test could be applied. In addition, there was concerns that patients might actually fall and actually perhaps become injured in the six-minute walk test. And so really to address these issues, what we developed as a modification to the test that's used by the American Thoracic Society is we did three things. The first thing we did was we had the clinical evaluators provide really constant encouragement to the child to continue walking and continue to try to make a maximum distance. And so there's really constant reinforcement, constant positive encouragement that's given the child, whereas in the American Thoracic Society standardized version of the test, the positive feedback is only given at a one-minute increment. The second thing we did is we actually had another clinical evaluator follow closely behind the child, a safety chaser, to actually help the child or young adult up to a standing position again in the event of a fall. And then the third thing we did was actually develop an orientation video that the child or young adult views prior to performing the test, so they really knew what exactly was expected of them. And I think with these three modifications, what we found in these papers that we published was that indeed the test was really very consistently applied to the Duchenne population. We got very reproducible results. And also, fortunately, we really didn't see much of an issue with falls, and we have never had an injury in the six-minute walk test as well. And I think that was borne out in the clinical trial by PTC Therapeutics as well.
Now, I think we should just point out the papers we're talking about, as you've implied, are not the study of a PTC drug itself, but in just baseline studies of Duchenne boys. And
right. These papers, yeah, that's exactly right. These papers were actually our experience really validating the 6-minute walk test as a measurement in Duchenne dystrophy. We did these studies just at one center at UC Davis Medical Center, and the first paper really focused on the reproducibility of the test, as well as some relationships with other clinical parameters in Duchenne muscular dystrophy. The second paper focused on longitudinal observations, so really looking at the change in the outcome measure over time.
And just to give it some idea to our listeners, in the first paper, I believe it was 21 ambulant boys. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
The mean distance these boys with Duchenne dystrophy walked was about 360 meters, so about 3.5 football fields in distance during 6 minutes. How does
That's correct. And the mean distance for the control children, these were the children that were typically developing, was much closer to 600 meters, so it'd be closer to 6 football fields.
So these really fell out into two different groups. How and your second paper addressed longitudinal observations in this. How do these change over time in Duchenne dystrophy? How does this distance walked in 6 minutes tend to change over time?
That's really a great question. If you look at the entire population of boys, young men with Duchenne dystrophy, in general, they actually tend to lose distance over time, and the average loss of distance was 57 meters in the papers in the longitudinal paper over time. Now, that is in contrast to the typically developing control population that are actually growing over time. They're getting taller. They're increasing their stride length. Those individuals actually increase their 6-minute walk distance over the course of a year by about plus 13 meters.
So your very nice work here has clearly shown that this is a changeable measure over time. It's reproducible, and I think it's obvious to our listeners, as you mentioned before, that it clearly is related to an important function, walking. How does it compare to these other outcome measures that have been used in clinical trials, and do you anticipate its use in future trials?
Again, that's a very important question. We want to ensure that there's really been a lot of work done in Duchenne dystrophy clinical research over the years, and we want to make sure that this new outcome measure actually stacks up well with other outcome measures that have been used in the Duchenne population. And in fact, when we correlate it to some of the time function tests, there's really a very close correspondence between the 6-minute walk test distance and the 10-meter walk run value. There's also fairly close correspondence with strength measures, particularly knee extension strength, and some of the other timed function measures such as time to climb 4 stairs and time to stand. So all these measures have some degree of correlation with one another, but really the key for somebody developing and designing a clinical trial is they want to choose an outcome measure which has reproducibility, which has limited variability over time, correlates with some of the other important outcome measures that are done in Duchenne dystrophy, and also can be used to predict one of these clinically meaningful events, such as loss of ambulation. So these are all important considerations that go into the choice of a primary outcome measure for a clinical trial. Also, another important consideration is the Food and Drug Administration really wants measures that have some precedent for showing a clinically meaningful change, and they're not wed necessarily to any particular outcome measure. They just want to be sure that whatever outcome measure is chosen, that outcome measure actually does have some correspondence to a clinically meaningful life-changing event or another clinically meaningful outcome measure.
Craig, some listeners may have family members who are not walking or may not be walking themselves. What might be appropriate outcome measures in this DMD population? Certainly there are clinical trials underway and being organized for patients who are already in wheelchairs. What are the challenges in this population, and what might be appropriate to measure?
That's a great question, Kevin. The challenge in the older population with Duchenne dystrophy, they have perhaps less functional muscle tissue, and they may actually be showing changes that are perhaps very slow over the course of years. And I think traditionally, one of the measures that people have actually recommended was pulmonary function testing. And so this is an outcome measure that we know is clinically meaningful and has some relationship with perhaps the need for non-invasive ventilation or the need for various cough assistance devices. But also, I think another issue that can be looked at is upper limb function or upper extremity function. And as you know, as a collaborator with the MDA sponsored clinical research network, there's actually a clinical research project going on right now at the five centers at your center, Ohio State. This study is being led by Ann Connolly at Washington University St. Louis, John Day at University of Minnesota, Basil Darris at Boston Children's Hospital, and then our center, EC Davis, are participating in a study trying to look at outcome measures that could be applied to older individuals, non-ambulant individuals with Duchenne muscular dystrophy. And there's a variety of upper limb measures that are being looked at. One is a measure called the nine-hole peg test, which basically is a measure of hand dexterity and upper limb function. So the young adult has to pick up pegs and place them in a pegboard, and the completion time is actually the measure that is evaluated by the physical therapist, the occupational therapist. And so I think this is a test that has promise. There are also some other outcome measures that are really looking at global upper limb and mobility function over really the entire course of the disease. One is the motor function measure that has been validated by the French group. And in addition, we're also looking at some other novel measures of upper limb function in Duchenne muscular dystrophy. One is a measure of volume of reachable workspace, and we have some quantitative means to put actual markers on upper limbs, and we can actually map out the actual volume at which a patient can reach. And we think this might be an alternative way to measure upper limb function. And so obviously the goal would be coming up with an outcome measure so that if we develop a drug that has effectiveness in the non-ambulant population, we could actually detect those changes in those individuals.
Well, that, I think, leads me to sort of my closing question for you, which is, what do you view as the next steps for standardizing outcome measures for clinical trials? What gaps do we still have, and where do you think we can work together?
Well, I think it's gonna take really the cooperative efforts from many people at many different centers to really evaluate these outcome measures in the Duchenne population. I think the first and foremost, what we need is good natural history data. You're collecting great natural history data with the United Dystrophinopathy Project. We have a natural history project in the Synergy Network, the Cooperative International Neuromuscular Research Group. And in these natural history efforts, what we're doing is really collecting some of these measures over time and really seeing how they perform as far as detecting the change in status of patients over time. One issue that we really don't know yet is for the use of these clinical outcome measures, are there particular age groups where certain measures are better than other measures? So, for instance, in the 4 to 6-year-old population, there's a lot of interest in studying those patients. Some of them are still not started on corticosteroids, glucocorticoids, which can impact the variability of some of these measures over time as well. And if we look at, say, a 4 to 6-year-old age group, some of these measures are actually improving over time. And so that makes it even more challenging to really be able to measure a drug effect in the context of a clinical trial. There may be other subpopulations of Duchenne dystrophy where patients are more in the decline phase. And so, therefore, if patients are in the decline phase and we're able to actually document that a drug stabilizes loss of function, so essentially the drug keeps the patient in a stable situation, but the patients not treated with the drug are continuing to decline, then that actually may be real powerful evidence showing the effectiveness of that drug. So really understanding the natural history of Duchenne dystrophy, I think, is really probably the next critical step in really standardizing these outcome measures and making the most appropriate choice of outcome measures for these clinical trials.
We've been talking to Dr. Craig McDonald of University of California, Davis. I want to remind our listeners that they can find a link to Dr. McDonald's information to his website on our homepage, as well as a link to the abstracts of the papers we've been discussing. Craig, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us today and for your great work in this field.
Kevin, it's my pleasure.
This podcast is brought to you by Nationwide Children's Hospital. You can find out more about the Muscular Dystrophy Program and ongoing clinical trials at Nationwide Children's at our website, nationwidechildrens.org/muscular-dystrophy-podcast. You'll also find a link to the published abstract of the study that we discussed today. Thanks for joining us.